Well, thank you very much, Ray. I'm really happy to be here, and I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to be here to share some of the things that we've done. Although I have to confess from the beginning, I'm not an expert in this issue, but and I am not working on that actively, but I have to deal with this many times for a long time, as I was working in Mexico especially. During the 90s, the 93, 94, the situation with the extension system in Mexico changed dramatically. It was privatized, and so I was working with the government in providing training, education to all the new groups of private advisors that developed in the country. And it was very clear to me that there was a big problem, and I think, unfortunately, this is still there, in the way that the problems are identified and prioritized in the at the field level. The education in agronomy, in agriculture in Mexico, has undergone excessive, in my view, specialization. And I think the magnitude, the kind of problems that the agronomists identify depend a lot on their specialization, if they are soil scientists or economists or animal scientists or whatever. There is always a bias there. And the other important aspect that is present, unfortunately, is that a lot of the education is really more, I would say, trivial. I mean, they provide the concepts of what's going on in plant science, animal science, and soils, but there is a lack of more quantitative basis. So it's very common to find reports about identifying problems, and then they use more qualitative. You know, this is a serious problem, this is a bad situation, but nobody really knows what serious or bad or worse is, or better, you know, for that matter. There is a lack of numbers, and so we started to work, and some of the results that I'm going to present here is we selected to work on with approach of boundary lines. Boundary lines, maybe you're familiar with, there was a paper many years ago in 1972 by Webb, and it was described as a potential tool for diagnostic approaches. And after that, it was applied in many other fields related to soil nutrients, more specialized studies, denitrification, yield gap analysis, and so forth. But essentially, the way that this approach works, and we developed it in Mexico, is if you look, for instance, at these four graphs here that describe the relationship between maize yield and four variables, these are the same data points. This is the same data set, but it's arranged in four different ways depending on which pair of variables you are considering. Here we have maize versus the population, plants per hectare. Here we have in relation the yield in relation to soil organic matter, here with the sodium content of that the soils, and here with EC, the electrical conductivity. So in each of these graphs, we establish the boundary line, which is here in red. And let's say, for instance, that we went to a special particular farm and measured the population, the plant population, and it was around 55 to 60,000 plants per hectare. And so based on this data set, we expect yield in that farm or that lot to be around 9 tons per hectare. Now, in that same place, we know, or let's say that we find out that this is the organic matter content, and so that would be the expected yield. And likewise, we do for the other two variables, soil sodium, which is much higher, so the yield level, or expected yield, is less than 8 tons. And for the EC, if we had a value of 0.4, then the yield would be a little bit above 8. So based, and this is an example, on these four graphs, we could establish a sequence of importance in terms of limiting for factors for yield. that the ceiling, the top of yield expected will be the least with sodium because of the sodium content that we have in that field, and then salinity, then the soil organic matter, and finally population. So it means that really in this particular field it's not worth to be manipulating or increasing population, for instance, unless we take care of the sodium issue. And then we will need to worry about EC and so forth. And, you know, this can be expanded, of course, to include many variables as much really as you can handle. So what I'm going to present today is something that we did as part of this educational process or project many years ago in Mexico. And remember, this is something that we did with agronomists. It was to educate, train them in identifying problems in the field with corn, with maize production. And we took advantage of that opportunity and started to build the databases. We were working in the south of Mexico, in Chiapas. This is a very highly productive maize area called La Frailesca, which is lowland tropics. It's about 500 to 700 meters above sea level in the south part of the state of Chiapas. We visited with three different groups of advisors, of private advisors, that number of maize plots at harvest time. This was done at the end of the harvest time, at the crop cycle. We sampled each plot following Lafitte methodology, which essentially what she recommends is to take somewhere around 8 or 10 random sampling points in each plot, 5 meter long, length of the crop rows, and then we did the evaluations of the ears in the plants number 1, 5, and 10 systematically in all the plots. So this is how the agronomist went around the field first to see the dimensions, the relative dimension, the width and the length, and so they established the sampling rows, and they started to take the measurements. In addition to that, we also took samples, soil samples, and analyzed, but we couldn't do it 1,800, so we just did a much smaller number, 838 maize plots were analyzed, the plow layer. So this is, for instance, the database that we accumulated for that area, and the way that we the way that we constructed the line was to divide the data on the x-axis in intervals. Here you can see one as an example. And then we calculated what is the arithmetic mean. So in this case, would be 69.5 kilos of nitrogen per hectare. And we assumed that all the points that were in this range between this line on the left and the other one on the right, all these points were related to the arithmetic mean, which is, again, 69.5. Then we ordered all the numbers here from the smallest to the largest and calculated the 99% percentile, which is the red dot that you see in each point here. And that's then we joined the dots and constructed the line. This is the procedure that was published in 2000 by this Ott Schmidt et al. So here we see some of the data that we generated. We were using, for instance, here is population. We did this separated improved genotypes, which were the majority of the farmers were using improved hybrids at the time. And here you see on the right the native or local germplasm. And as you can see, of course, the yield potential is higher in the improved genotypes than in the local. And you can see that the population tends to be optimum at a lower level for the local germplasm than the hybrid. So I am going to also point out that this kind of data, in addition to diagnosis, it helps also as a research tool because this kind of responses were not known in that area before that. So they didn't know exactly what was the population the range of population that should be, or the optimum population for that area. Likewise, we did the analysis for nitrogen response. This is the total amount of N applied in the crop cycle. And you can see that there tends to be a maximum around 200 to 220 kilos of nitrogen per hectare. Now, you see that for 200 kilos of nitrogen, for instance, this is the maximum line, the maximum that you can expect. Now, there is a wide variability here. So all these points here, for the same amount of nitrogen, the yield is less because there are other factors are intervening and are decreasing the yield. But we are interested in finding out for a particular value of a variable, in this case nitrogen, what is the maximum yield that we can expect for that area, for that crop, and for those growing conditions. That's why we are interested in using, or we were interested at the time using the boundary lines, because if you try to adjust a conventional regression line, for instance here, most likely because of the variability it would not be significant and it wouldn't really be helpful for our purposes. Since the sampling was done at harvest time, we also look at some symptoms of damage or problems that might give us some information about what happened during the crop cycle. For instance, we looked at the ears that had scattered grains and open spaces without grain in between them. And we know that these problems can be due to either silks being eaten by insects or flowering, or heat, extreme heat, or lack of water at pollination. So we don't know for sure because we hadn't taken observations or samples earlier in the cycle, but that was an indication of problems that we might have to do or be more careful in the future for the next following cycle. But still, you see that in this particular variable, maybe at around 15-20% damage, the yields are not significantly damaged, decreased, so the yields can be expected to be affected a higher percentage of this problem. Another symptom that we looked at, we looked at many, I'm just showing two as an example, was the number of ears with sun rows missing or partially or completely, and this in turn could be due to the phosphorus deficiency or high plant density, poor plant arrangement, or that those ears are second ears in prolific plants. And again, there seems to be like a threshold, about 20% of this problem, then you start seeing more of a decrease in yield. We distinguished also a harvest root lodging from stock lodging, and this is the variation in yield with root lodging. And if you look at this compared to stock lodging, you see that stock lodging seems to cause a more immediate and sharper decrease in yield, which is, it makes sense also from the type of damage. So if the plant is broken, the stock is broken, translocation of photosynthesis is interrupted, so you could expect the effects in yield to be more drastic than in comparison to root lodging, where the root lodging, the whole plant is leaning, but it's still in one piece. So, and that was confirmed by the data. So this is important. Then it remains to follow the diagnosis, of course, determining what is the reason for either root lodging, if it was insect damage to the roots, and likewise for stock lodging, if it was a problem with insects or nutritional imbalances or other problems. I'm going to show also the results of the 38 soil analysis that we did for some important variables. The soils in Chiapas where we did this work are mostly sandy loams, soils with very light texture, low in organic matter, and unfortunately, they haven't followed many conservation practices. Burning the residue is fairly common. Organic matter levels, therefore, are low, and you can see here that there is a clear response to increasing organic matter contents from, say, from 1 to 2 tons you can have almost 50% at least increase in yield. Another big problem in Chiapas with the high rainfall and light texture soil is acidity. And here on the left, you have the relationship between maize yield and exchangeable aluminum in centimoles or milliequivalent centimoles per kilo. And here is on the right the percentage of saturation percentage of exchangeable aluminum in the CEC complex. And so you see that our data suggests that values between 15 or 20% aluminum are already decreasing markedly the yields, which is in agreement with it has been published more in the literature. Potassium, for instance, is interesting because most farmers don't use potassium. There is also this idea potassium is sufficient, that there is no response. However, the data from these soil samples shows very clearly that there is a clear response to potassium. Some of the soils there have very low contents. This is exchangeable available potassium. So I was pointing out some of the advantages of the boundary lines, boundary line approach, and with the current trend to more site-specific management in terms of crop and soil nutrition, plant nutrition, the boundary lines provide or facilitate site-specific applications. We could do this not just at a farm level, but also at a point in the farm. You could do that at different degrees of detail. And at each location, we can identify single yield limiting variables, you know, as I pointed out in the example before. We don't need a separate process of variable selection like with other mechanisms. We just, you know, we have the database, we build the database and with different variables and relate each one in a one-to-one relationship to yield. However, there are also limitations. One of the main limitations is how you draw the boundary line. Initially, by the time Webb published his paper in 1972, and even some years later, many authors published papers where the boundary lines were drawn by hand, just by eye. And then there were developments, different approaches, like the one that we use, but there are at least two or three others. But that's one of the things is people who like to use this approach are kind of, they have a stumbling block. It's like, okay, how do we draw, how do we establish that boundary line in a way that is accurate, that it has a meaning. The other problem that is also frequently pointed out for this approach is that the location of the boundary line can be influenced by a few data points, and so you have to be careful with the selection, and if you have values that are outliers or that have a strong influence, you need to be sure that you include them or not in the analysis, in the drawing of the boundary line. Now, I emphasize that given our situation in terms of resources and the magnitude of the problems, I'm talking about Mexico, maybe also developing countries, we need to use the advantage of this approach in terms of research. You know, just earlier today I was talking with a colleague from Mexico who was telling me that in last year he had 8 trials with fertilizer, nitrogen fertilization in maize in Mexico, and he ended up having 3 or 4 because he lost all of the others because of the weather or problems. So what I'm trying to point out here is that the conventional way, the conventional process of doing research has serious limitations because, you know, you need to control a lot of variables and you end up with high costs and limited success many times. In this approach, we are using surveys. We are using when the agronomists, the technicians, or the extension advisors visit the farm, and then they collect the data, and this is something that they do anyway because they have to visit there. And so if they can be smart in the way that they build the database, which variables they record, and how they analyze the data, they can get valuable information that can be applicable not only for diagnosing the problem, establishing priorities, but also provide research answers. There are also some treatments or some factors that are difficult to implement conventionally. For instance, when we talk about root lodging or stock lodging, if you wanted to do this in the traditional way, I mean, I can't imagine how you're going to provoke, you know, if you have a uniform maize crop, you know, to superimpose something that produces root lodging in different extents, you know. Those are things that you either go to the field and collect the results there and the observations from the field, or I really don't know how else you can study the effects of these variables on yield. We are also collecting the data from the farmers' fields. These are realistic. We are covering the circumstances, the environment where the farmers do their production. So in that sense, it's more realistic. We are not working in an experiment station only, which usually the experiment stations have management histories and conditions that are very particular. We are working on the farmers' condition. We are working with the farmers. So the farmers are also involved, which is important. So the approach here is different than the conventional research approach. In the conventional method, we tend to select uniform pieces of land, and then we apply treatments to create variability. The treatments can be fertilization, tillage, whatever. But we make sure or try to control the variability. That's why we make replications and introduce all these other control features so that we know that the effects that we are measuring are from the treatments that we are interested in and not from other factors. In this approach, we say, well, you know, we don't need to create the variability. The variability is already there. It's existing. All we need to do is really to collect the data from that and try to make deductions, interpret that to provide answers. And farmers are involved. So, to conclude then, we believe that this approach is valuable. Unfortunately, in this particular case in Chiapas, there were other factors involved that prevented us from continuing. The original plan involved sampling the crop maize at four different stages, you know, at immersions, during the active vegetative growth, reproduction, and then at harvest. But and this is what we're trying to do with other growing areas in Mexico at the time. But the boundary line then offers advantages for diagnosis, both for diagnosis and research. We emphasize that it's not a replacement for the traditional research procedures, but it is complementary. I think it's important. And right now, at least in Mexico, there is a lot of interest in doing surveys for other purposes, not just for this, but they want to verify the effectiveness of the extension services or credit or something. So we might take advantage of the efforts being made for those purposes and collect data that can be used for diagnosing or finding a solution for problems. So again, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Armando.